ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Chapter 4, The Incarnations of Godhead, Acts number 9. Ittam bruvatya vayate naradeva deva.
Ittam bruvatya vayate naradeva
deva. Ittam bruvatya vayate naradeva deva. Savidanam rasi rasa saginam kam uchu Savidanam rasi rasa saginam kam uchu Maitan vibhotai pare vikrite vichitram Naita vibho tvai pare vikrite vichitram Swaramadira nikaranata pada patme Swaramadira nikaranata pada patme Itam. In this way, Bhruvati, when he has spoken, Abhayade, the giver of fearlessness, Naradeva, O King Nini, Deva, the demigods, Cupid and his associates, Savita, out of shame. Namra, power. Sirasa, with their hate. Sarvinam, begging for compassion. Tam, to him. Uchu, they say. Na, is not. Etat, this. Vibho, O Almighty Lord. Vayi, for you. Hare, the Supreme. Avipite, unchanging. Vichitram, anything surprising. Swarama, of those who are self-satisfied. Dira, and those who are sober-minded. Nikara, by great numbers. Anasa, bow down. Bow down to. Adapati, whose lotus feet? Translation. My dear King Nimi, when Naranarayan Rishi thus spoke, eradicating the fear of the demigods, they bowed in hate with shame and addressed the Lord as follows, to invoke his compassion. Our dear Lord, you are always transcendental beyond the reach of illusion, and therefore you are forever changeless. Your causeless compassion towards us, despite our great offense, is not at all unusual in you. Since innumerable great sages who are self-satisfied and free from anger and false pride bow down humbly at your lotus feet. Purport. The demigods said, our dear Lord, although ordinary living entities such as the demigods and ordinary men are always disturbed by material pride and anger, you are always transcendental. Therefore, it is not surprising that we fallible demigods could not appreciate your glories. Ittam ruvatya vayate naradeva deva saridanam rasirasa sarvinam tamuchu naitat ivo vayi pare vikrite vichitram saram dira nikarana tupada patne. Translation again. My dear King Nini, when My dear King Nimi, when Narayan Rishi thus spoke, eradicating the fear of the demigods, they bowed in haste with shame and addressed the Lord as follows to invoke his compassion. Our dear Lord, you are always transcendental beyond the reach of illusion, and therefore you are forever changeless. Your causeless compassion towards us, despite our great offense, is not at all unusual. It's not at all unusual you, since innumerable great sages who are self-satisfied and free from anger and forced pride, bow down humbly in your lotus feet. And your lotus feet. Om Nagana Pimandasya Tananjana Slakaya Shashamaritam Yena Tasmai Shigaravema Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasadpare Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityananda Namaste Sarasati Devi Bhagavani Pichayana Namaste Sarasani Avalika Sichari Shatkarana. As the saying goes, pride comes before a fall. Every time I remember this statement, I always remember the example that was given. I can't exactly, it's either from the Bible or the Testament. You see, when I went to primary school, or even actually when I went to school, primary, secondary, I went to a Jesuit school. So there were brothers or Jesuit monks who were teaching them. So every morning we have this classes, and they teach about things like think before you leap. Pride comes before a fall. Remember, the pride comes before a fall. I always think of the giving now of a knight, very proud of his valor, riding on a horse, and there was a tree and a branch in front, and just not going to bow down, I'm too strong, I'm not going to bow down. And then of course he kicked the branch and fall over. So every time I remember this, when I think of this, about pride, when pride comes before fall, I always remember that story. So there was some use from my school days. You learn something from it. So this pride is actually a great enemy of someone on the path of spiritual life. Throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam, even throughout in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in various places, Mahabharata, Ramayana, you find how even very, very powerful personalities, because of pride, they commit offenses. Most offenses are committed because of pride. It is not very difficult to become proud. Every living entity, when they possess a little bit of openness, they become proud. Even though there's nothing much to be proud of, but one he may think himself, oh no, I'm so good. I have a little bit of openness. And like Prabhupada said, even a pauper on the street, he wears 2 paisa, he thinks I'm so, he becomes proud, I'm so rich. I have 2 paisa. Sometimes you see this with children, small children, you give them a dollar coin and they walk around showing a dollar coin. They become very proud. I'm so, like, I'm so rich, you know. I remember when we were in the BBDH, or the European BBDH in Sweden, we had like a country ashram, that's like a manor house, 5 acres of land, very beautiful, surrounded by 2 lakes. And we used to have some peacocks, but the peacocks all get eaten up by the fox or wolf or whatever fox. So one master couple, he gave shelter to one baby peacock and took the big peacock back to his house. And his house was just like, this workhouse caravan kind of thing. Sometimes they have that in the construction site, where they have just a rectangular box. So that was his Grihastha ashram. Very small. And he had this peacock. And he was telling me how this peacock, they have a mirror on the floor. And this people, every time he passed by the mirror, he would stand in front of the mirror and flap his wings. Now flap. And walking, this, you know, looking around. That's why they say as proud as a peacock. Ever heard of him? As proud as a peacock? So it was very interesting when he said that, how this, even this tiny baby peacock, have you seen a tiny baby peacock? Nothing, just brown feathers. It's not developed, all these colors and everything is not developed yet. It's just brown, fluffy feathers. But yet, he was walking around like really proud of himself, fluffing his wing there, you know? So it does give an indication, in the mature sense, anyone who has a bit of confidence, they become proud. And anyone who has a little bit of position, going to get a chance or mama to. Anyone who has a little position, they become proud. They want to exercise. Now I'm great. Now you surrender to me. I remember in the old days when on Sankirtan, sometimes when there are two persons in the Sankirtan party, they have to argue who is going to be the Sankirtan leader. What does it matter? Two persons Sankirtan party. But what has to be? I'm the Sankirtan leader. But actually this pride and passionate and not understanding proper things in proper perspective can be the cause of so much problems in one's life. Especially causing so much problems in the life of the devotee. This is where a lot of offenses arise from. Due to pride. Because of pride, we have do not have a proper perspective on things, on who we actually are, and especially in relationship with others, then we do not acknowledge other devotees, do not appreciate other devotees, and especially we may not appreciate someone who is more advanced, someone who is more senior, and then that affects our dealings with others, and that's where offenses arise. It's just like this story of Vishwamitra. Vishwamitra Muni has a long-standing conflict with what's the other? Vasishtha Muni. He was Vasishtha Muni. Actually, Vishwamitra was a king. He was a powerful king. Came to the ashram of Vasishtha Muni. And Vasishtha Muni received him very well with all his armies. And he was just providing unlimited foodstuff and all kinds of things. And Vishwamitra was thinking, how this humble brahmana living in the ashram provides so much opulence and food and everything for my whole army. How did you do that? And he asked his sister Muni, how do you do that? He said, don't worry. Come on, tell me. I have my cow. Well, what cow? He has a special cow, Kamadini cow, which can provide fulfill unlimited desires. And he said, I want that cow. I'm the king. King can claim everything. I'm the king. And Vasishtha Muni said, forget it. No way. I need this cow for my yajna. Now I provide all this milk and all these ingredients for my yajna. No. But Vasishtha Muni could not give up. He was proud. He said, I'm going to take it. And he sent his soldiers to steal it. Steal the cow. The cow was crying for help. Vasishtha dispatched those soldiers easily. Then he sent his army, and he dispatched his army. He defeated the whole army and defeated Vishwamitra too. And Vishwamitra thought, what brahmana, what power a brahmana has. Brahmana tejas, power of a brahmana. So I'm a very powerful king, and I'm defeated by this brahmana. So brahmana is more powerful than a king, so I want to be a brahmana.
This is the nature, this kind of Bhagavad Gita, the nature of a Kshatriya, Ishvara Bhava. He wants to be in control, controller, Ishvara Bhava. So he performs severe austerities, and then the words came, okay, now you have become such and such. No, that's not enough. Perform austerity, I want to become higher and higher and higher. In the end, it became so powerful. He became so much powerful that he was even able to create planets. There was this one king. One day he just had this idea in his head, I want to go to the heavenly planet. And he approached his guru Vasistha Muni. He said, I want to go to the heavenly planet. He said, no problem. I'll perform my yajna and send you to heavenly planet. He said, no, you don't. So next lifetime you can go to heavenly planet. He said, no, you don't understand. I want to go to heavenly planet in this lifetime, in this body. Vasistha Muni said, this is ridiculous. It cannot be done. So he was dejected, walking around, and he came upon Vishwamitra. He said, my dear king, why are you looking so despondent? He said, you know, I want to go to the heavenly planet in this body, and I was told that it cannot be done. He said, yeah, this is ridiculous. Why do you have such a ridiculous request and desire? Of course it cannot be done. He said, yeah, my guru Vasistha Muni said that too. He said, did he? Did he say that? He said, alright, I'll do it. You see the rivalry between the two. He said, I'll do it. And he performed a yajna and actually sang this king. Anyone remember the name of the king? He sent this king up from the heavenly planet. And then demigods saw him coming up, this human being coming up, going to report to Indra. He said, what is going on? How can human being come up to the heavenly planet? And Indra said, no, he's not allowed to come. He said, go back down. And he was coming back down. And Vishnu said, he was coming down, crying out, Vishwamitra, help! Going diving without a parachute, skydiving. And Vishwamitra said, no, go back up. And Indra said, down, and then up and down, up and down. You see, sometimes these desires, when we desire something that is not natural, not as normal, things, it becomes very troublesome. See? It starts going up and down in the sky, hanging. And then finally, Vishwamitra said, stop. And he created a whole heavenly planet for this king, because he made a promise. But he used up his shakti, he used up all his tejas, power, and he could not maintain it. He could not sustain it, and the planet was come crushing down. And his cry of Vishnu, 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 please help. So Vishnu was able to hold it, and he told Vishwamitra, he said, next time, please leave the matter of creation to me. It's not your dharma. So there's one instance of Vishwamitra. This pride is there. And of course, there are other cases of Duvasha Muni out of pride, taking a fight with Ambarish Maharaj. Who is this Ambarish Maharaj? He's just a grihastha. A king, a worldly king. I'm a great Muni, I'm a great sage. He's not respecting me properly. He's breaking fast. He invited me for lunch, and then he's breaking fast before the guests come. And he take a fight with Ambarish Maharaj. Take a head, throw it on the ground, create a demon to destroy Ambarish Maharaj. But Ambarish Maharaj was such a great devotee. Fully engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. He did not move, he did not push me. He thought, if Krishna wants me destroyed, I'll be destroyed. If Krishna wants to protect me, I'll be protected. And Sudarshan Chakra came, and of course the fire demon immediately surrendered to Sudarshan Chakra. And Sudarshan Chakra was chasing Duvasha Muni all over the universe, just with his 360 spoke just behind the back. Duvasha Muni was running here, running there, trying to take shelter of Indra, trying to take shelter of Shiva, Rama. Nobody could give him shelter. Went all the way to Vaikuntha to take shelter of Lord Narayana. Lord Narayana said, well, you offended my devotee. There's nothing I can do. He had to go back only way we can become free from this offense is to beg for forgiveness from the devotee. He came back down, begged forgiveness. And Ambarish Maharaj went, "Yes, see, where you been? I'm still fasting, still waiting for you to take lunch." Please. And he offered a prayer. Ambarish Maharaj said, "Whatever austerity, whatever kind of activities I've upon," he prayed to Śrīla Chakra. He said, "I bless this upon this. I give, offer this to this Brahmana." So see the difference, the quality, wonderful quality of devotee. Although others may pick a fight with him or make offense, but they do not see any offense because of their humility. The interesting thing about humility and pride is that when someone is not so advanced, he becomes very proud of his whatever little advancement he has. But someone who is actually advanced is very humble, thinking how little advancement I make. He sees even this little bit of contamination, think, "Oh, I'm so fallen." And that's a true symptom of someone who is really advanced. He develops this pure humility. And why humility? Because he fully understands his true position as infinitesimal part and parcel of Krishna. I may be great. I'm 1/10,000 tip of a hair great. But that greatness is still very great. It's described as sun, it's like more brilliant than 1,000 suns. And the soul is very, very powerful. But in order to get a proper perspective of things, one has to see things in relationship to Krishna. When we see things in relationship to Krishna, then we get the right perspective. What we do is we try to see things in relationship with other devotees. And then we start to judge things. "Oh, he is this, he is that. So I'm more advanced. I'm more austere than this devotee, so I'm more advanced. I observe Nijam Ekadasi. Every Ekadasi observe Nijam. So I must be very, very advanced. Because all these devotees are not observing Nijam. Doesn't matter I sleep all day. After I'm fasting, I'm not eating, I'm not drinking. And I'm weak. I'm chanting, so I'm just sleeping. But I'm more advanced because I'm very austere. This devotee is just not advanced. They're only doing their 16, 25 rounds, their Ekadasi. And then running around doing service, book distribution, or whatever they do." So how things just become distorted quite easily if we are not very careful. Therefore, if we do want to make comparison, we have to find the right source to make comparison with. Make a comparison with our relationship to Krishna. And we know where we stand. And that's why we regularly hear Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Chaitanya Charitamrita, to understand more and more the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, His wonderful qualities, His wonderful pastimes, His wonderful activities, and all of the transcendental nature. Then when we hear more and more of these things, and then we see ourselves, we say, how can we be proud? When we actually understand the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, our relationship with Him, how can one become proud? So, become free from pride. Actually, that's a symptom of someone with knowledge. In the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna described the qualities of someone with knowledge, what are the first two qualities he mentioned? Humility, pridelessness. Why did he mention both? When you have pridelessness, it also means you're humble. Humility is there. I mentioned both. Stress the point, humility and pridelessness. So it is to be free from pride is not something artificial. It's not that one just go around and go Haribol Prabhu, Dandavat, Koti Dandavat, 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 Dandavat. Do something. One time, when Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, when he was coming out of the guest room, when he was coming out of his room to do the morning walk, there was this one devotee, every day would come greet Prabhupada with nice prayers, and you know. And then one day Prabhupada just said, go do something useful. Do something useful. So that also when we perform our activities, when we actually engage in active service, this is also a symbol of humility. We're acting as a humble servant of Krishna. Menial service. Thinking of I'm a menial servant. That's why it's very good. Nowadays, it still happens to a certain degree, but in nowadays and John, we often start off in the kitchen washing pots. You ask any of the old devotees, they'll tell you that's where they all started. It's all started washing pots. Washing the pots, cleaning the floor, cleaning the bathroom. Doesn't matter who we are, that's where we all started our service. And then gradually we move up. Gradually doing. And I know also from my own experience how sometimes when we giving, especially when we're younger devotees, we're giving responsibility. I know when we joined at that time, around that time, there were not so many senior devotees around. And so very often you have to grow up very fast. You really put on a fast track. And before you know it, you know, a few months later you're a Sankirtan leader, in charge of the Sankirtan party. And before you know it, you're in charge of, you know, 1-2 years later, you are in charge of Sankirtan whole country. And you're just given the responsibility of coming thick and fast and thick, you know, coming so fast. And inevitably, being young devotees, quite immature, we sometimes get to our head. We start walking like that, I'm the savior of the world, you know, I'm the carrier of the mission of my guru. And fortunately for us, they want me to Swami always bring us down to earth. Very quickly. Very quickly he'll bring us down to earth. And he used to call us, he said, I used to call us frogs. You know why frogs? You know, frogs are croaking all the time, making a lot of noise, but not doing much. You know, just inviting that snake of death to come and swallow. So he used to call us frogs. Making more noise than action. So there's the other factor to it, that it's always good to have someone you feel more comfortable. Then okay, I may be giving the service responsible, let me just go full on, knowing full well that if I go off track, there'll be someone that will yank me back. Yeah, okay. You know. Because when we're young, we have a lot of passion that still needs to be purified. So much passion. So it's good we utilize the passion in a proper way, in some very active service, and just go on, go full boom, you know. Sometimes he used to call me like a bulldozer. Sometimes you're like a German tank. Although I'm not German, it's like a Blitzkrieg, you know. You know what Blitzkrieg? That's the philosophy of the German army. They just come with everything. They throw everything at you, just come boom, just storm you down, run you down. To overwhelm the army. Everything gets brushed aside. So that was me saying, stormtrooper, everything brushed aside. So, but of course then as you grow a little older, whether you like it or not, the passion is still both up. You're not so energetic as you used to be. So we learn, that's why we're here. We're not too much alarmed. Shouldn't be too alarmed when someone is manifesting some unwanted qualities, someone showing some pride and some arrogance or this and that. Nothing to be alarmed. It's expected. What do you expect? We don't all come from the material world. But what will be alarming is that when we lose the ability to hear, when we lose the ability to listen and hear and take advice from other devotees, that's when we should be alarmed. When you start thinking that I'm beyond advice, I figure everything out, I know everything, I know what is best for me. It may not necessarily be true all the time. That's why it's good. That's why there is some logic to it. Very good logic to it, especially in the culture of in India and still many cases. I quite respect many of these Indian devotees when they get married, they go back. They just allow the parents. I thought these Indian devotees, they come here influenced by the West and staying here for a few years, but they're still allowing the parents to. Because normally when this kind of thing, well, brains are so clouded, with so much emotions involved. When the emotions is high, intelligence is very low. When emotion is low, intelligence is high. So the parents are more objective in their selection, thinking what is best for the kid. So taking advice is very, very important. Taking advice, we all need advice, we all need guidance from those who are senior to us, so that we can always be on the right track and not be carried away. Because especially as we grow older in devotional service, so we take on responsibility.
So many different responsibilities.
Sometimes the tendency to become proud is always there. Just under the surface, the red, ugly face. And especially when we are in a situation, sometimes we don't see the cover. Therefore, it's good to have the shelter and the guidance of those who are senior to us to gain us back and to tell us that it's Haribo, take it a bit easy now. Haribo Prabhu, Haribo Mataji, take it easy, take a step back, examine the situation, don't get to your head, don't let the head grow too big for your head. Or don't wear a hat too big for your head. So in this way, these are actually tools of basic things that we need to have very strongly in us. These are all very strong basic foundations that we have to have very strongly in us to be able to progress far in Krishna consciousness. Because without this basic foundation, our Krishna consciousness is built on very shaky grounds. One should not equate advancement in Krishna consciousness to positions, big positions. Just because one may be a very good manager, you may be given a lot of responsibility as a manager, for example, does not necessarily mean the most advanced. He has a nature to manage. And someone will maybe have an ability to lead good kirtan. And when you lead a kirtan, everyone is very enthusiastic. All it doesn't necessarily mean it's super advanced. It may be also. Or one may be very good at talking. So whatever ability we have, we may be very talking and then we become proud. Just see how good preacher I am, how many devotees I make. I make him a devotee, I make him a devotee, I make him a devotee. You don't make anyone a devotee. How can you make anyone a devotee? All we do is just try to be an instrument to inspire someone in their Krishna consciousness, which is already there. It's not within our power to make someone a devotee. So we never give very wonderful classes, and our class, everyone comes and says, "Oh, Prabhu, thank you, very nice class." And I mean, see how great preacher I am. No, I did a kirtan, or whatever we do. It is like the violin, you know. You go to a concert, and the violin is playing a violin, and he's really good at it. And at the end, there's a standing ovation, and the violin just jump off the hand of the violinist and stand there. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. The violin is an instrument. It's the violinist who use the instrument that should be glorified. So Srila, we are instruments in the hands of spiritual master. We are instruments in the hand of Krishna to carry out his mission in so many different ways, in so many various activities. So if someone comes and say, "Oh, you did good here, you did. Thank you very much. All glories to Krishna, it's all Krishna's mercy." We can take encouragement from them, no doubt, but ultimately at least, my Guru's mercy, my Krishna's mercy. So I came this by with an instruction that I received from Prabhupada. The one instruction I received from Prabhupada that stayed with me. Very, very powerful instruction. It was 1982. Just one of the 12 initial guru kind of just left his home and went to the Golden Mark. So it was a shock. It was a shock for all of us when we heard that. So the devotee was asking, he said, "How can this happen?" And I somehow I could understand that it can happen, but I could not explain it. So one morning, I was taking a nap just before Guru Puja. At that time, I was managing the BBT. I used to get up, chant all my rounds before Mangaratis, and then read, and then go to the second part of the program on that. So sometimes I take a little nap before Guru Puja. And then Prabhupada appeared to me in the dream. We were sitting on the sofa, right? Very close to one another, the knee practically just touching. And I was asking Prabhupada, I said, "How can this happen?" And Prabhupada said, "This can happen to anyone." And I said, but he's a pure devotee. And Prabhupada was very brave, and he said, "They are all made out of my mercy." And then went right in. And it was such a profound statement, that one statement. "They are all made up of my mercy." I remember just about 3 years ago, when I met John Maharaj in Auckland, I mentioned this to him. And he was very thankful. He said, "Oh, thank you very much for reminding me of this." That is a very profound statement. So that really gives us a perspective when we understand that statement. That's the perspective that we should have. Whatever great we are, it's all by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, because we are all made up of the mercy of Guru and Krishna. Whatever ability we have, just think of it. Before we came to Krishna consciousness, what great abilities do we have to speak like that? Speak philosophy. Speaking philosophy that even great learned scholars can become impressed. It always amazes me. When I was in Copenhagen, there used to be one professor of Vaishnava studies, not just Indology. He teaches Vaishnava studies in the university in Copenhagen. And very often he comes to the temple and consult with me and ask me questions. And it always amazes me. I thought, this guy is a professor. I just barely finished high school. And then went to the university. And he is coming. And then I thought, this is how glorious Prabhupada's teachings are. How wonderful they are! That just by studying this his book, we can become so learned that professor comes and consult with us. You know? And never fail to amaze me every time he comes. There was another time a devotee was in the in another I think Sri Sampradaya. Sri Sampradaya. And he was visiting, and it was the Vyasa Puja of the Guru. The Guru was very old and known as a very learned scholar. And then asked him to speak. He is a very great scholar of Vaishnava's philosophy, and he asked him to speak. So just at that time they were singing the prayer of King Kulasekhara. And this devotee he remembered. Yeah, the lecture Prabhupada gave on the prayer of King Kulasekhara. So basically he was just repeating what Prabhupada said. And this a child, he was so moved by the lecture. He was crying. And he said, Bhaktivedanta Swami, he is so wonderful that he has trained his disciples to be such great scholars. And this devotee was thinking, I just repeated what he said. It was not like even my lecture, I mean, I just repeated. And he was telling another example. One time he was giving a lecture in the courtyard in Vrindavan. And the residents of Vrindavan were so impressed. He was just basically repeating a lecture he had heard. And he was just repeating the lecture. And the residents in Vrindavan were so impressed, they all went to Prabhupada. And said, Prabhupada. And I said, Swamiji, he is such a great preacher. You should make him the temple president here in Vrindavan. So he was the secretary of Prabhupada. And Prabhupada left him behind. He said, alright, now you stay behind, you'll be temple president. Because you preach nicely. And so what has that got to do with it? I just give a good class and I end up temple president. And Prabhupada said the best preacher is the best manager. Because especially in Islam, it's not about our great managerial activities to manipulate things and manipulate people. It's through preaching. Because everyone is a volunteer. You have to be a good preacher to inspire people to serve, that they want to serve. They have volunteered their time, they volunteer their life. You have to inspire them to serve by preaching. Sorry, my own time. Thank you. Is there any questions or comments?
Emotions. So, but what is more important in Krishna Bhakti, is emotion or intelligence?
Well, that's transcendental emotion. It goes beyond intelligence. Krishna Bhakti goes beyond sensory, mentally, intellectual perception. Nothing with that. That's why also you can see sometimes when someone is absorbed in Krishna Bhakti, you read the Chaitanya Charitamrita. From the mundane, intelligent point of view, it's not very, logical activity. You know, you hear about the pastor of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who is running mad, thinking of the sand dune as go down hill, jumping in the ocean, thinking of Yamuna. Well, from a mundane point of view, it's not someone of high intelligence to act like that. It's completely beyond this. But still, you get give an indication how emotion high intelligence are. Because you can't think straight when emotion is high. It's just like when besides recommend that when one is upset, you are angry. This is not a good time to make decisions. Hate means waste. When you make a decision in haste, it ends up in waste. So, he says, take deep breath, calm down, and then sleep over it, think about it, and give the decision the next day or whatever. And you'll be more calm down.
What is the difference between the emotions and the transcendental emotions?
Huh?
What is the difference between the emotions and the transcendental emotions?
Well, in material emotions, you mean? Material emotion is material emotion, transcendental emotion. Material emotion is based on sense gratification, this feeling of the senses, the mind, the intelligence. Transcendental emotion is the natural feelings of the soul towards the Supreme. Of course it's different. What do you mean, what is different? How long have you been around?
But like if you are living a kirtan, if you are doing dancing in front of the deities, and these all are emotions, isn't it?
Yeah.
These all are bhav. So what is the difference between that bhav and the transcendental
bhav? Well, that's a taste of bhava. When you're in kirtan, when you're standing in the kirtan, you're jumping around, dancing around, that's just a taste. It's not that we're not experiencing it. The only problem is not we are not experiencing all the time. We don't get a glimpse of it. That's the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Krishna and Bhagavad Gita say you surrender first, then you get. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu say you take first and then you surrender. It's just like you've done catering. You should try. Those who have done catering, they know. People come up and say, hey, take a piece and try it out. You try it out and then you buy it. The same. We are in the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Just take and then you pay. Alright?
So can I add a little?
Yes?
It's in the material, it's I am the center, whereas Nirvana and Krishna is at the center. So we differentiate.
Yes. Material emotion is all centered around me, how I feel. Understand that? If you can't understand that, then you have to get there and experience it. That's the best way to understand it. That's your power key done.